It's time for the WJBM Outdoor Show, presented by Midwest Tractor Sales. We'll hear from your host, Aaron Quillen, after this.
See more and do more in a new 300 series compact track loader from New Holland. Its industry-leading 360-degree visibility is truly something to see at Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. With its reverse camera and 8-inch multifunction LCD display, Super Boom lift technology, rock-solid stability, and redesigned controls, you'll work with greater speed, safety, and precision. Maximum productivity starts with a clear view. Stop by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville today and see how a new 300 series compact track loader helps you do more.
Welcome to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. We're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-County. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple: kill big deer. Today we have some friends and neighbors from Calhoun County, Travis and Dylan Camp. Guys, thanks for coming out.
Hey, no problem. Pleasure. Appreciate it.
It's just awesome to be surrounded by these big buck killers, these legends that I hear of. I don't know how we got to know each other, but I feel like it kind of became like a friendship when we killed that buck out on the ridge there.
Yeah.
And Dylan, you came out to the lodge.
Derek actually did.
Oh, yeah. It was your other brother. Derek did. So it just happened. What was the story on that deer? He said something like it came by all of you or something like that.
It was quite the story, honestly. It's like, so we already had a buck harvested.
Okay.
And next thing you know, we're out hunting and...
We knew that he was in that area, so our cell cameras went off, and he was in there. So we're like,
actually hunting on the farm that day.
I don't think I was.
You
that
was.
Day.
You was hunting on the farm. I said, "Hey, dude, there's a stud on the 40 right now," and you was sitting in your truck, about ready to go out.
Oh,
yeah. And he went out to the backside of the ridge, and didn't show up. So we're like, and it's just, I don't know. I feel like on a scrape, you know, a main scrape hub. If it's raining, you know, they're just going to want to hit that as soon as they can again to freshen that scrape up of theirs.
Yeah.
And so we're like, we better get in there as soon as we can. You know, we don't want this deer to leave the property. And so we all went gung-ho on, you know, a little 40 acres to try to get this thing. And Derek, we set him on the spot where, you know, we had pictures of him at. And it was just kind of bad luck.
For him.
I mean, it was just...
We set him up in a good spot. Since we killed deer, we're like, Derek, you get it. This is where he's going to be. There's where all this is, a scrape line. And like, you set up there, he's going to be there. It's like, it's not to make you feel uncomfortable, but he's going to be there.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean?
And lo and behold, he showed up. I mean, it was breaking daylight.
Yeah, he didn't take the time to, you know, range before, you know, it was like, you know, just getting kind of daylight where you can kind of see through your rangefinder, you know, to kind of pick out everything where, you know, if it's game time's going, you know, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And he kind of made that mistake. And sure enough, he showed up at like, what, 20 yards?
He's close.
He got nervous, missed the first shot.
Oh.
He come back around. And so we kind of set him up in like a saddle. I hunt out of a saddle, but it was like a weird tree to hunt out of. So I kind of set him up out of that because it was kind of just a little, you're hunting like 10 feet off the ground.
Okay.
In this spot. And so I kind of gave him a rope, hung it around the tree, set him up around his harness.
Yeah.
And I guess whenever he drew back the second time, his rope went in between his freaking string and his cam. And when he shot at 10 yards at that time,
I got even closer
to him. It jumped. So it went right over his back. And it was, after that, it was kind of.
String flew off his bow at that, after that. So he was done. All he had to do was sit there and look at the deer then.
Yeah.
Was that on the same day?
Yeah, all the same morning still.
That was the same morning. And then, like,
You heard him up there say something.
I heard him yelling above me. You know, I'm like, texting him, dude, be quiet, be quiet, you know? And so he's like, I'm going to get out of here. I need to go to the bow shop and get my bow fixed. So at that time, or later on.
We hung in there a little bit longer.
We hung in there a little bit. And so it was like 11:30. Getting pretty close to noon, and we were texting back and forth. We're like, dude, I'm hungry. He's like, I need to go let my dog out. Then I'm going to jump back in the stand. And we were like, all right, we'll hop down, kind of, you know, reevaluate things. We thought the deer was gone. I'm kind of an arrow knocked, and I'm just kind of creeping up because, I mean, ground's wet. It's real quiet.
Yeah.
Figured anything could happen, you know.
Oh, it was prime time. Yeah. It was second week of November.
Yeah. So I'm just creeping up the hill, and I see this body behind this honeysuckle, or the head behind the honeysuckle, but I seen a giant body outside the honeysuckle. I'm like, oh, gosh. I don't know what this is, but it looked big, you know, big body.
Yeah.
And so
you and Derek are only 100 yards apart, if that. So you know,
Derek's already gone.
But I'm saying with that deer, he just went into this little piece of thicket.
Yeah. So I just, you know, kind of just peeked my head around this honeysuckle, and sure enough, I see just rack, and then he sees me and just bolts, and I'm like, gosh, dang it, you know, like, what's the chances of that, you know?
Yeah.
After, you know, I figured Derek just scared him off the farm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm down there packing up my book bag in the tree, you know, putting my stuff in there, and then I kind of look up, because I'm down in like a ravine where the hills kind of come down, and I'm kind of up on the edge of it a little bit to where, you know, I was thinking I was in a pretty good spot for where the deer normally come. And so I kind of look up the hill, and I just see this wide rack down the hill. I'm like, God, I feel like I'm on the Drury Outdoors right now or something. You know what I mean? So then I'm like, I'm thinking he's coming this way. And he doesn't. He crosses this ditch, and right behind my tree, 5 yards behind my tree, he cuts and goes left. So then I'm in the tree kind of like this, draw back. And by the time I get back here, I see him. He's 5 feet from my tree. He's already looking at me. I'm like, crap. So as I'm pulling the trigger, he takes the run, and I just take the hair right off of his back leg.
Oh my God.
And then he was gone.
Yeah. Never seen another picture. Never knew he was on the farm. I think you guys must have killed him like within the next day or so.
It was close to probably a week later after that. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we seen your picture pop up.
There he is.
Oh my gosh.
You guys, at least somebody got him, you know, locally, you know, or, you know, around the area, because we had no idea what happened to him, you know?
So that was a new farm for us that year, right? Yeah. It was our first year on the farm.
Yeah.
And, you know, historically, the crops on that farm were always out super late. So we didn't really have a lot of access into the farm until the crops came out.
Yeah.
And it being a new farm, you know, first thing I did is I had Bub, a friend of mine, was guiding with us, said, drive around that farm, find the sign. And he came back and was like, hey, go hang a stand anywhere, you know, you think. And he went back into that, you know, tucked back like grass field back there on the edge. And then, you know, probably, you know, we hunted a little bit, you know, based off the wind and stuff. We didn't shoot anything. And then another one of the guides, Drew, was same thing, get a stand out there, you know, where you see fit. And he went and he hung kind of like behind that field where there's like an old log road up there on the north side.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting and we hunted it based off the wind. You know, he wanted a northeast wind there, I think. And it just wasn't happening. I'm sitting back going, all right, I got two guides that chose, you know, stand locations 100 yards apart tops. I'm like, something's going on in this area. You don't need to look at it to know something's going on where this is favorable. I'm like, we're missing it on the wind or something. So we literally went in there and hunted it on a southeast wind. And I think that's how it worked. I think it was, we were hunting it on a northeast, and then we switched to a southeast. So we were hunting it on a southeast, and we switched to a northeast. And lo and behold, that buck came out, and he whacked it.
Yeah.
And this dude, Pat, he's a professional shooter. So you know he's going to make a good shot.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He killed it.
Yeah.
Knocked it down. That night, or when we went to recover after dark, I don't know if one of y'all saw it. It would have been Snapchat or like Instagram or Facebook, but I don't think I had put like a... It would have been like a story.
It was.
Or
it was before it, we waited. It was a few days. It was like a day. It must have been that night or something. I don't know. You put something on Instagram with the guy's deer or something.
Okay. Well, it had to have been that night because all of a sudden I get a call from your brother and he's like, "Hey, I want to see that deer."
Yeah.
So the next thing you know, he's at the lodge cutting it up with the guys, having a great time. Yeah. You know, hand him a beer and we're kind of celebrating that deer. And that is kind of where it all kind of started.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I knew about you guys. And again, you guys are pretty successful deer hunters. So
appreciate it.
Gotta stay after it. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
We have bad days too.
I hear that. I hear that. So you guys hunt, you know, on some family places and then some public ground as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier you like to do some saddle hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. Love the saddle hunting, man. Okay. Love it.
It's kind of what we're into. We don't really we have a few stationary stands, but 95% of the time we're grabbing our gear and we're moving every day, different spot, different, usually same areas but different trees. We don't like to sit in the same spot too long because as you know, deer kind of educated deer will kind of pick you off after a few years or whatever.
So we just
moved all
like
the time.
That element of surprise, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's just
that's what we lean most of our success to, is the element of surprise, honestly, because they never really know where you're at all the time.
Just so many times I feel like, you know, whenever
when we were kids, you'd notice like a deer,
that doe just comes right up to the stand and she just looks straight up. It's like,
yep, got me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many different, I'm starting to call them superstitions.
Yeah.
Right? Because you think one thing's one way and then you find out it's another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, a huge example of that is, you know, one, that deer, we hunted it probably two or three times with, we'll just call it a southeast wind or a northeast wind, and then we just hit the kind of the same east but from the other side, and boom, it happened. Yeah. So mm-hmm. we're, you know, having limited knowledge, but the other, like, one thing that comes to mind when we talk about superstitions is, have you guys noticed how when it's really dry and these deer can't smell, how much more you can get away with?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Get a little moisture in there, it's gonna be tough.
Yeah.
It's like, gets on their nose a lot better. They can.
Some days I've noticed too, whenever it's like really, really cold out, you know, and then it warms up real fast. I don't know. I've noticed too on days like that where I've gotten away with almost murder out there. You know, it's like pretty crazy.
Yeah. As we were talking before this, I think we all probably watched way too much YouTube and like deer podcasts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But somebody's been, maybe it was the deer collar study, they were saying that the warm-up after really cold consecutive days is also big-time deer movement.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you always think, oh, it's freezing cold, they have to move.
Yeah.
You might be better off waiting for that warm day.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Makes sense, trying to stay warm too.
Yeah. All right, so how'd you get into the saddle deal? What?
I don't really, I guess I got to take credit to the, you know, the hunting public, I guess, for that, whenever I was kind of big into watching them. But, I mean, kind of just like, you know what, I want to try something different, you know.
Tell how it went first. I wasn't into it yet. He was the one talking about it all the time. He's like, man, we ought to do this run and gun stuff. And I was like, all right, well, maybe we will. He's like, well, the Aquisto gear, Lone Wolf stuff, they come out with this new stand and stuff. I'm like, okay. He's like, you know, so I got the 1.0, I think is what it is,
and the
sticks and all that. You know, the whole, it was the thing there for a few years or whatever, and he said he's going to get one, and I was like, all right, I'll get into it. So I bought it first. It cost me like $1,100, $1,000 for this set, this run and gun stuff, and then this guy decides, he's like, well, I ain't going to spend that much money. So he doesn't do it. And then would you buy a saddle setup or something?
Yeah,
and then
tethered setup. It was like their first saddle they came out with. And then I can't remember what platform I went with. But, I mean, I think I ended up spending like, I don't know, $600 overall with the whole everything, you know.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I just, the run and gun setup is just pretty fun. I mean, the saddle, I feel like I can kind of, you know, hunt with my back towards, you know, my downwind side, and, you know, just kind of use that tree with in my face, you know, and use that to my advantage to kind of hide behind, you know. I feel like that has just helped me out tremendously.
It's more of an everyday game too. It's not like, well, I'm gonna put my stand here this summer and then this is where I'm gonna move them all to and this is where I'm gonna hunt this winter, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's more of an everyday game. You're gonna wake up and be like, no, I need to be over here a little more because that wind's cutting just a little bit to the edge, so I'm gonna come back a little more. It's just like I feel like you got more of an advantage. You can mess around a little more.
Yeah. Okay. And from what I've gathered, because I'm kind of late to the party on the saddles, you know, with setting tree stands and having clientele come in, you got to have the tree stand set. And it's usually, you know, for somebody that doesn't feel comfortable in a lock on, we've got ladders and, you know, we try and, you know, manage that.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've historically told people is, you know, if we're going to make an adjustment and you have a climber that you like to use, that often is the most convenient.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of tried to make it to where they'd bring the equipment down, you know, if they're a
repeating customer and coming quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, if they're a climber hunter,
like an ad,
you'll find out real shape, quick. Yeah. You know. If they're in shape, if they're able to, you know, successfully, if some guys come down and their climber's a piece of junk and you're like, we're going to go hang you a stand.
Yeah.
But I got to the point where it was like, okay, so we're using climbers from time to time. It's the easiest way to make an adjustment. I started to think, you know, these saddles, you're strapped to the tree at all times.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That might actually be a safer,
you know. I would say you're 100% safer. I mean, just as safe, if not safer, because you're completely strapped to the tree. But I will say it takes a little bit of time to get used to shooting out of. So I wouldn't say definitely want to practice a little bit before you just go, hey, I'm going to hunt out of a saddle, you know, tonight.
Right.
You know, definitely want to take some target practice before you do that, or just get a comfortable swinging around a tree. Because, I mean, if you take one step, you're going to swing across that tree and scare the crap out of you.
It can be frustrating because there are days where you get out there early in the morning and you get a fight with trying to get your light and kind of see what you want, when you want to hang your sticks, and sometimes it makes you want to go home and punch your pillow. But, you know, you gotta fight through that stress.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've started to say, you know, if we need to make an adjustment and you're a climber hunter or a saddle hunter, you know, go ahead and bring it down. And that way we can kind of inspect the equipment, go in there, help them get set up, and they're in something that they're used to rather than trying to, you know, go out, put up a ladder, put up a lock on. It's just more time, more scent.
Yeah.
And the thing that I've learned is that you want a different type of tree for a saddle than you do a tree stand.
You don't really get away with, I mean, like our equipment, it's a little bit harder to get in a bigger, I mean, you can't really get in a big old tree. I mean, if you have a hard time wrapping your arms around it.
And it's going to be more of a pain in the butt to try to hunt.
You can't get in. So you got to pick smaller trees, you know, unless you get a bit different straps for your equipment, you know. But I mean, I feel like you could just get away with just as much stuff in a small tree.
They're not used to you being there every day either.
So it's just, I don't know.
You're on the backside of it most often.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And then the other thing that I thought was pretty neat is it seems like when you get up to your height that you're going to hunt from, if the tree has a crick or a lean in it.
Those are comfy trees.
Yes. So you now have something that kind of you lean with. So do you want the tree to kind of lean over you or away from you in that situation?
I mean, I don't have a problem with any. I like whichever way. It's not so much if you're, you know,
hanging
at the point where it's
much.
Hanging off to the left or the right. I mean, I'd rather have one that's kind of coming back at me. It kind of depends on how you set up on the tree, what trails, where you think a deer's going to come from.
Okay.
But, I mean... just that aspect of using that tree to hide behind and try to play that game with the deer if it's coming from that side of the tree, you know.
Okay.
Is, I don't know, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Fun to do and get away with a lot, you know.
It's becoming more and more popular.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Every year. Well, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from the sponsors. Yeah.
New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines from Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville put more premium grain in the bin and save you money while doing it. Compared to competitive brand combines, CR Twin Rotor Combines lose significantly less grain. Independent third-party test results prove it. and see our twin rotor combines use less fuel and harvest faster to save you real money. Finish your season sooner with more grain safely in the storage bin. See Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville about New Holland CR twin rotor combines. They give you performance that pays.
We're streaming the best country on the new WJBM radio app. And for Android users, we've got an opportunity for you to test the new Android app and get registered to win. Just email mlorton55@gmail.com. We'll send you a link to download the app and you can give it a try. Plus, you'll be entered to win passes to Aries Resort in Grafton. Email mlorton55@gmail.com today and request the new WJBM app.
Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. We're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-County. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple, kill big deer. With us again, we have Travis and Dylan Camp, a couple of big buck legends over in Pike County, Missouri. We're not going to give away their local spots. So we were talking a little bit about setups with regard to hunting in the saddles and you know, how you know your hunting has kind of changed. What are some of the things that you guys are looking for when you're going out trying to dictate, all right, this is where I want to, you know, how do you kind of walk us into where are these breadcrumbs that, you know, the first ones that you start picking up on? And if you guys don't mind, kind of walk us how team camp does this stuff.
Well, the hidden secret is to just get out there just when season's over with. That's when you see all the action. That's when you see where you should have been.
Yeah.
A lot of the times you're like, God, did you see that car hood scrape? Why were we not over there?
Yeah.
Why didn't, I didn't realize they were using that place like that.
I feel
that.
Like that's where we pick up a lot of our inventory is for years to come, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think that's the most important tool is
just getting
just walking
there,
around there, even late season, you know, if you're tagged out, whatever, get out there in the woods. I mean, it's just, you can learn so much. I think props to the Onyx apps that helps out too, of like being able to have that in your pocket and be like, drop a pin right there, like, hey, big sign here.
Mm-hmm.
Even the tracking device on that is super awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
But
A small example is one of our public grounds we like to hunt is I usually have a camera in this one spot where there's usually a pretty big scrape, you know what I mean? So I was like, all right, we'll go in there. I'll get my camera this year. It was probably February or something. And I'm walking long ways to it, and I come up on a different scrape about 150 yards from where I usually set up and hunt, and this scrape was bigger than this table. I was just like, well, that's where I'm putting my camera that's coming up here. You know, obviously I was getting some of the bucks that were hitting those scrapes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all of them, like, that are smoking that one.
Yeah.
So that leads me to believe I need to set myself down a little farther, and because it's so thick in there that you can't hunt and see them deer like that.
Yeah.
You know, they're sliding in and out of there on you.
And trying to pick, you know, the best access point to get to that, you know, depending on which wind you want to hunt that spot, picking multiple access points, you know, to get to that spot is pretty key, I think, too.
It's always hard, though, because like, a lot of guys say that, too, and it's like, we don't know where that deer's hiding at today.
When
you're sliding in there.
Totally,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just
do the best judgment you think you can to put yourself into that opportunity of
best success.
Yeah.
Really.
And a lot of it's trial and error. I mean, you don't know until you're actually getting out there and seeing what's going
on out
in the woods.
That's a neat thing. Once you've hunted somewhere for 4 or 5 years, you really start picking up on how those deer's entering and walking through that place.
Yeah.
And once you got that figured out, then that off-season scouting too, that's all just bonus.
Yeah.
You know
okay.
I mean?
So the main factor with the off-season scouting, that's the leaves being down and seeing the cattle paths.
Yep.
You know,
cattle paths, licking branches or big old scrapes where they take their does to breed, because in those thickets you'll see all around that all them little satellite bucks are just tearing that up because the big guy had her bedded up in there, and you're like, well, I had to get closer to that area, you know what I mean?
That's interesting. I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah, little bucks always stand off distant, and they're always down there tearing up trees and stuff, and you see the big buck up there, and he'll come out every once in a while, tear his tree up too, but he'll go right back up in there in that brush and bed down with her or do whatever, bump on her to get her up. I've seen that a few times while I'm hunting. I was like, dang, that's cool.
Yeah.
Because all the younger guys are like, I know I'm staying back.
Yeah. That's awesome. That one place, CRP place that we hunt.
Yeah.
probably 3-4 years ago, had a guy with a crossbow. It was, you know, kind of a beginner hunter, and he had a buck kind of harem some does in there, and he was breeding these does like 10, 15 yards away, and it was too many eyeballs. He couldn't.
Yeah.
It was like an offhand shot.
Oh, yeah.
He was stuck up there. I always feel bad when somebody comes back and they got a big buck and they couldn't move because it was too close. And they had to, just because they have to sit there frozen so long.
Yeah. You can't even clear your throat. You're
you're just trying to act like a mouse up there, you know?
Yeah. He was talking about kind of that. And that's as you're talking about like a breeding area, you know, that's what comes to mind. And then to think about, you know, you're in there in the late season, you're kind of like just imagining, you know, what went on in there and the satellite bucks and they're rubbing and just, I've never put that story together. That's pretty cool.
It's just kind of a few things I've seen with them. And that's why I was like, well, cause I do that too. You know, there's times I've learned like, why is there so many rubs out here around all this stuff? And until I've seen it a few times, I was like, that's what these guys are doing. You know what I mean?
But
I don't know. And I guess I really think that that's whenever she's really close. That's when she's really close to coming in. So that's whenever that buck's got her pinned down pretty hard. And then them guys are, because I feel like if they're not quite ready, some of them, I don't really know. But you see them buffed in there sometimes. And then that's when they take off running through the woods and everything like that, going crazy.
Yeah.
But I think if she's really close, that buck stands over her pretty hard. And And that's when the mother buck's kind of, I don't know. They try their luck sometimes, I guess. But
I had a hunt one time. It was late October. I call it the pre-rut buck meeting.
Yeah,
we were on one of these farms off of 96 that we used to hunt, and I had a food plot, and I got up there pretty early, and first thing, there's a buck out there, probably a 3-year-old decent buck, and then next thing you know, another buck comes out, and they're feeding in the food plot, and then here comes one that we call Brahma Bull. Like Brahma, because he looked like a Brahma.
Yeah.
And he went under my food plot fence rather than jump over it.
Really?
Because he's an old toad. And then the next thing you know, it's like too early for this to be happening. It's loaded with bucks, like a dozen bucks. No does. And all of a sudden, a couple of them started like looking at each other. And I think they were outside the food plot, kind of in the pasture area. And then some of them that were in the food plot must have heard some vocalizations, and they look up and they hop out. I'm telling you, like 8 bucks got in a circle staring at each other, stomping the ground. I mean, I'm 200 yards away just watching this.
Yeah.
And they are, it's like going around and one saying, I'm the man. And then the next one's going, no, I'm the man. And then the biggest buck I might have ever seen in my life, it looked like it had a horse rib cage on its head, came out of the woods and ran on the inside of this circle of bucks, and it addressed each buck and like stomped at it. And each buck cowered down to it. And it did the circle, and they all cowered down to it, and he went back in the woods.
Huh.
And then they're all kind of standing around there going, well, I guess I'm not the man. The next thing you know, I got this doe coming right under my stand, and I'm thinking, no, if you're a female, you do not want to be in this field right now. The next thing you know, she comes out, these other deer see her, and absolute pandemonium broke loose. It was one of the wildest hunts I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And I call it the pre-rut buck meeting, because I don't know what else it was. I've never seen deer form a circle. And literally, it was about to be a royal rumble.
Yeah.
Until that big buck came out and scared every single one of them into, like, if something goes down, it's
I'll be
me.
The first
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
yeah. So...
No, they're
it's crazy
wild.
The stuff you see out there. I mean, it's just, I don't think people take for granted the experiences you get to
witness and take in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so much cool things that you see out there. I mean, it's just so many different personalities in the deer. It's like a buck you killed from last year is totally different from the buck that you may harvest from the next year. It's crazy to learn and see all that.
Let's talk a little bit about that. How do you, so in other, you know, other times we've talked, you guys are keying in on specific deer a lot of the time. How do you keep track of them all?
I mean, here recently, it's just usually been like one or two that kind of intrigue you a little bit. But I mean, there's been, you know, some years where you may not have, you know, a giant on the farm, but it's a big mature deer, you know, that we got on the farm. And it's like, that just tickles us just enough to kill, you know, we work the biggest and oldest guy in the woods, you know.
We work really good together, too. Like, if say if we only have two big bucks that we really want to kill, all of us, we're not greedy about it to each other. We're all just wanting to get them that thing laying on the ground so we can get our hands on them.
Because
so
we're big. All three of us are each other's biggest cheerleaders. Like, you know, he kills his big one the one year. And, I mean, I was just freaking stoked at work. I mean, I couldn't even. I was like, I'm ready to go home, you know.
Right.
And the first person, you know, we're calling is
each other,
you know, or Derek, you know, we're all calling each other, like, just pumped, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, it's pretty special to be able to share that, you know, all together. But, I mean,
we kind of find our few that we want, and the one that gives us the most, you know, the most encounters or the most pictures or the most that we feel that we have him kind of, we have him beat, that's whenever we kind of get after him. And a lot of times it pays off. But we get, I mean, we have a few we've tried to play with, and they beat us. I mean,
we've got that big eight
that we can't get an encounter with. We've had a few 150-yard encounters with him, but we cannot close the distance on this deer. It's like something we got to figure him out, I guess, yet. But he's, like I said,
every deer's got his own personality, you know. It's like this one's showing up on camera, or, you know, this one just may show up out of the blue, you know. It's like the mind of a whitetail is amazing, of like how
his personality's like humans in a weird way.
Absolutely.
Like, you got some aggressive ones, some that don't want to be messed with.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
The best, you may snort and wheeze at one.
The best tool in the woods.
He may take off. You may snort and wheeze at the next one, and he's like ready to just come in there and just beat the hell out of you. You know, it's just, it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
That's probably our secret medicine, too, is that snort and wheeze.
Okay.
Oh, my God. That has killed probably most of our deer.
Okay.
Once you know he's a dominant buck and he's out there rolling it, you're like, all right, I got you.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
You throw that at him.
Long, drawn out, like, I've always heard, like, a long, drawn out grunt. It's like a breeding grunt.
Yeah.
And I've always done that first just to be like, hey, I'm over here.
Yeah.
And then if he doesn't want to come in, you just hit that snort and wheeze, and it's like a freaking, I'd say 9 times out of 10, you'll get one just beeline in on you, you know, ready to tear something up. I mean, I've had one that just dropped the turnip out of his mouth and just the other way. But,
all right.
I mean, you just never know until you try. I'm going to try it no matter what.
Once you build up your information on the deer, like that eight, we know not to snort and wheeze at him.
Yeah.
Because he did not like it. I did it to him last year trying to get him to come to me, and he all he did is he looked down at me for a little while, and then he bolted. I was like, all right. He wasn't about it.
So okay.
It's like the personality thing's crazy on them things. You got to kind of figure him out a little bit before.
Yeah. I mean,
or if he's had his butt kicked, he ain't coming to a snort and wheeze probably.
Yeah, he want his butt kicked again, you know?
Now, do you guys use like that grunt tube that you snort wheeze with, or do you just do it straight out of the mouth?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You always try to get it away from you, or you know, where your wind's not going to give him the favor, so he can try to circle your downwind side or something. Just try to get it.
Because they can pinpoint it down pretty good. I mean, with the grunt or the snort and wheeze. So we always try to just do the grunt or the snort and wheeze.
Okay. Like,
downside of the tree, you know. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
whatever works out, it works out.
We don't have a lot of gimmicks. We don't get into the sales pitch with all the stuff they try to sell anymore out there anymore. Just, man, you don't need it, honestly.
Yeah.
You just
hunt.
right. Now, do you do anything where you want the buck, like, looking the other way or ears kind of facing the other way before you snort wheeze?
Yeah, if he's got you, if he's got your attention, don't mess with him.
I don't. If he's looking my direction, I won't do anything until he's got his head turned or got his attention towards another deer in the field, or, you know, just looking somewhere else before you try to do that. Because if you do that, you might as well.
He's going to look right in your eyes at the tree.
Yeah, right, he's going to look into your soul. So, like, don't want to be looking into that guy's soul.
Right.
Because he's going to get you.
Okay. Yeah, we had a hunter that had just gotten back from Africa, and he was telling us about he was bow hunting in Africa, and they've got whatever deer species or antelope species, the small ones.
Yeah, like gazelle fast. Or
I have no idea. Yeah. I'm not that familiar with all that.
I'm not either. That was just a long guess.
But there was this animal that they instructed him, don't shoot until the deer is looking away from you, that the actual turn of that deer's head slowed him down just enough that he can't duck your arrow as well.
Okay.
It was a quick little sign.
Yeah.
So I've always thought about that, you know, before I call, I always try and make sure that the deer's, you know,
preoccupied.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know, sometimes you lose your window.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys do any blind calling, blind grunts, anything like that?
It'll every now and then. I mean, whenever, you know, it's like nothing's working, so, you know, I'll just try to do something.
More like a grunt, if anything.
Yeah, which I think, in another hand, with doing the running gun setups, I mean, to tell you the truth, I think that attracts more deer than anything whenever you're, you know, trying to set. I've had multiple times
when you're trying to set up.
Yeah, it's like you're making all that noise. Like people are so worried about making noise and, you know, everything else. It's like, I don't know. I think that, I mean, not that I'm purposely up there just shaking the heck of a tree limb, you know, but.
Right.
I don't know. I've had multiple times where you're setting up.
And when we're setting up, we've got to use our saw and we've got to.
Yeah.
But when did you drop that leaves and them limbs and stuff sometimes?
Like they think it's making that noise. Making a scrape or, you know, just playing around in the woods or maybe even a doe getting chased.
It could be just ironic timing, but it just happens quite a bit. Could be too.
But it's just kind of crazy how that works, you know.
Yeah. When I was way younger and way dumber, I had this idea. I don't remember what the situation was. But I decided I was going to sprint to my stand.
Yeah.
And it must have been enough of a path, but I literally ran to my stand and got up it real quick. Within minutes, I had deer around me.
Yeah.
Like a chase. They probably heard the leaves and thought there was a chase going on or something, maybe.
Yeah. What I didn't want to do is I didn't want to sound like a human going in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I decided to run to my stand in the dark, which is dumb.
Have a good light going in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I remember one morning, it was like completely just no wind at all. And I think it was going back to like, I feel like the mornings where it's like super, super cold. And then it gets, as the day warms up, it gets good, which maybe that had to help too. But I mean, it was quiet. I was going in this long ridge and I mean, it was so dry. I mean, it was like, oh, it was so crunchy going in there. And I'm just scaring deer everywhere. I get in there, I'm like, I'm not going to see a damn deer this morning.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be like, I mean, probably one of the best hunts I've ever had. I mean, I seen probably 25, 30 deer that morning. I mean, obviously no shooters or anything, but I mean, a few good bucks, but I mean, it was still, you just never know. I mean, what's going to happen.
That time of year. That time of year plays a lot. Them deer are moving, they're rutting. You know, it's hard to really buff them out.
Yeah, I mean, when it just comes down to it, I mean, I feel like you
Just get in there
and get after it. Yeah. I mean, because, like, there's multiple times crazy stories about him harvesting his deer. Like, he's hunting, or even a few of my hunts, like, the wind, you're just, like,
cutting knife with that thing.
With the thing, in the deer, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, this ain't ever going to work. But when it does work, you're like, damn.
Right.
This freaking worked.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know. I mean, there's, like, his big one he shot a couple years ago. Tell the story of that one. I mean,
that was a shameful story.
Crazy luck, but
I hunted it. What was like the first week of
October. I don't remember first weekend.
And we thought we had this buck pretty well figured out. So I climbed up in this walnut tree, and you know, it's kind of getting worse light. I could see him coming back out of the field two bedding, which I don't know how I didn't scare him, because where I walked into this field, I walked all the way through our field, climbed in this walnut on the edge of our field. And he's walking the same route with a couple other younger bucks and some does. And he gets right underneath me. I was like, how did he not? I did not scare him out of the field. I drove my side-by-side, you know, about 300 yards back, got out, walked through here. I didn't push him out of the field, I guess, somehow or whatever. Sat up in this tree. Like I said, he's coming to me. And I get nervous immediately because kind of some does came out here on the other side of me, and they started winding me a little bit, and he kind of stopped. He wasn't very far, probably 30 yards or less. I pulled the trigger on him. I had a walnut right in my sight, too, so I ducked down. I was trying to duck down a little bit in the tree, and I pulled the trigger on him, and I shoot low because I wasn't even where I needed to be, and I smoked him right in his forearm, cut his forearm wide open. I didn't know that at the time, but he took off running, kind of stood out in the field a little bit, looking around, and then jogged off. I said, I just screwed it up. I mean, I was so sick. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But then we let, like, 2 weeks go by.
Not even that. It was like a week because it was still, like, beginning of October when you shot that thing.
Yeah, okay, we let like
because I shot mine the 13th, and I think you shot yours the 15th or some crap like that. You shot yours the 13th, and then I shot mine the 15th.
Well, he wasn't on our camera in that spot for like 5-6 days. We'll say that, and then boom, he started showing up. Like, I'm getting back in there. I got back in there. He did the same exact thing. I came the same way, everything. And then
my spot, the wind was even hitting his favor too.
Yeah, and he come walking right up through there. I spined him, so he dropped. Unfortunately, I spined him, and then he started crawling to me. So I laid another one into him, and then another one. But eventually, let's just say
he ended getting up, away from me.
Yeah. Let's just say he passed away after that one, and it was just you know, like
just a crazy story. I mean,
and that was early season too. Like the deer should have took that as hey,
you would think, you know, like
a 5.5-year-old deer. You know what I mean? Should have. You would have thought
never going to see him again, you know, being that early in the season, you know,
and but do the same thing.
Not the case. Again. He did the same exact thing. Like nothing happened. I guess he didn't know what got him.
Yeah.
So he just gave it a few days of a break and then routined again.
I tell you what's funny about that story to me is when I see somebody go into the woods with like 2 or 3 arrows, I'm always like, are you sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
My quiver was empty. Yeah. I promise you that.
I've gone out with 5 arrows and been empty quiver by 7:05.
Yeah.
Matt Ballman asked me how many holes I put in that deer. Because he's our taxidermist.
Yeah. It's fun though.
It is.
It's
adrenaline is at an all time high.
I know. And you know, even it's archery, so bad shots do happen.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
We hit deer sometimes where we don't want to.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is as cruel as we can possibly be with a bad shot, Mother Nature is 10 times crueler.
It is. Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah.
So, and we do our best. Everybody does their best to get it out of its misery or whatnot. So it's not like we're out there trying to put bad shots on these things.
And it's just part of archery. I mean, it doesn't matter. You could have a rifle that shoots 1,000 yards, be shooting 50, and run into the same thing. It's just kind of part of it.
Yeah.
You know, on the flip side, as hunters, we are the stewards, and we are the ones that promote, you know, preservation and, you know, population of animals and manage them for health. So,
yeah.
You know, at least we got that side of the coin, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take another break real quick and hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
See more and do more in a new 300 Series compact track loader from New Holland. Its industry-leading 360-degree visibility is truly something to see at Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. With its reverse camera and 8-inch multifunction LCD display, Super Boom lift technology, rock-solid stability, and redesigned controls, you'll work with greater speed, safety, and precision. Maximum productivity starts with a clear view. Stop by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville today and see how a new 300 Series compact track loader helps you do more.
Got a relative, friend, neighbor, or coworker with an upcoming birthday? Call the WJBM listener line at 618-639-4567 and leave a birthday wish, and we will put it on the radio, and that person will be entered into weekly and the end of the year $1,000 drawings. And you, the caller, will get entered, too.
Please leave your first and last name.
Weekly prizes drawn on Tuesdays at 7:30 a.m. The end-of-the-year grand prize winner will be drawn on December 30th.
Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. We're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-County. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple. Kill big deer. Legend in the making, Travis, and also legend in the making, Dylan Camp, Big Buck Hammers, back again. So, guys, one of the things I want to touch on is, you know, you guys talked about how you kind of use the same, you use each other's intel to help each other. The three of you brothers, you know, hey, I saw him over here doing this. Maybe we should be here, that type of thing. You kind of play together. And, you know, we kind of do that with the outfit. You know, we had a hunter in here last week. We were seeing Buck at point A. This week he's at point B. You know, we got to stand in between. Maybe we try that type thing. And we try and use that information. But when it comes to like the scouting and again, trying to locate these deer as to where their travel corridors are, you know, what are some of the things that you're looking for even in the late season, the off season, or during the season when you're hunting?
I think a lot of it revolves around, you know, food and traveling to food and from food, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Well, there's three big season changes, really, and obviously early October. You want to be
still around that
on
food.
on them field edges and food.
If you got clover, love a nice anything that's got some clover around it.
As soon as you see that combine hit that field, get out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Ag fields.
The dinner bell.
Yeah. As soon as they pick that field, you better be hunting there within the first 2 days.
Get out.
Because it's like, it's fireworks out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty crazy. But, I mean, I don't know. As far as, like, trying to scout and, you know, go through and run through a new piece, you know, I think just, you know, obviously looking for where the scrapes are at. We like, you know, finding scrapes right off the get-go.
The bigger thing we've kind of leaned towards now is too finding the deer that we want to hunt and figuring out what he's doing. Kind of trying to figure out what we think he's doing. A lot of times we don't see him. And then, you know, one of these days we get lucky. It's finding the deer we're after, kind of, or the one that we would be
happy. It depends on the time of the year, I think, is what terrain I think we're hunting. I mean, full rolling rut, we're definitely in the timber for sure.
Yeah.
Hunting long ridges or hunting hillsides where they may be circling a thicket.
Yeah.
Early season though, it's anywhere around food on field edges, around scrapes.
Mm-hmm.
Late season, it's just, I would say, strictly just food. If you can hunt over a cornfield somewhere and just maybe observe the field and move in from there, of like, hey, these guys are moving over there, we need to hop over there and try to sneak in on them, you know. And I think that's pretty key of like the running and gunning. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously you could still go out there and hang a setup, you know, but I mean, it's like, are you going to set up like maybe three deer stands for each wind, you know? It's like, yeah, it works. And absolutely, it'll work. 100% it will. I just feel like, I don't know, you got a lot more options to be able to just move around everywhere.
Right.
But like, yeah, I would say terrain features, that's...
I like that. I think that's a really good strategy. It's like the hunt before the hunt.
Yeah.
Where you kind of post up, hey, I'm kind of in the first, you know, mm-hmm. spot where I could potentially kill this deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know he's coming out here from trail camera, or somebody's seen him or whatever. I'm going to set up here. If I kill him, great. But I plan on seeing him.
Yeah.
And then where he comes out, that's where I'm going to try and kill him.
Yeah.
So kind of like that.
Yeah. And that worked. I had one that year, 2 years ago now, I killed my first one. It was like that. We were getting pictures of him on one end of the food plot and on the other end of the food plot. And it's just a bottleneck food plot. And decided to hunt on the edge of it, and the wind was just, I mean, kind of scraping at the end of it. Went in there very hungover, not thinking, you know. I was just like, all right, I'll just go in there, just, you know, just see what happens. And mm-hmm. sure enough, I mean, see him at the end of the, it was CRP, but mm-hmm. we had a lot of clover in our CRP, and he just pops up at the end of the field. I'm like, gosh, dang it, just work your way this way. And grounded a few times.
It's a big wide open field. So the
wide
chances
open field.
Of
so
it coming
like,
that way. It
was
probably
pretty
slim
chances.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just threw a grunt and he popped his head up. So I knew he heard it, and then just threw a little snort and wheeze in there just to try to see what would happen. And he just come in, just kind of just taking his time. Came within 20 yards, and it, I mean, I don't know, worked out, you know, observation spot, you know, just something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, trying to hunt your way in there, just trying to see in new areas or whatever. That works out really well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got just a few minutes left. And, you know, what really is cool to me about today is, we met because we're hunting, you know, similar areas, you know, farms that aren't too far from each other. And, you know, fortunately we've been on the right side of that. And, you know, we choose to get along and celebrate each other's victories.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really choose your neighbors. So what do you think are some of the key things that, you know, either we've done to be able to, you know, procure this friendship or that you wish other neighbors were able to do, you know? I think that's so important that we kind of look at it from the aspect of how do we, you know, how do we promote? Because if we're fighting, then that just means that the people that don't hunt, you know, we're distracted, not paying attention to people that are trying to take that opportunity away. So what do you guys think a good neighbor consists of?
First thing I think is obviously you don't want to have conflict. Otherwise, you're taking the enjoyment out of hunting to begin with. So there's no reason to get uneasy about some silly deer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're trying to do the same thing. And if that guy, you know, really the only thing people get mad about either way is hunting fence lines or some guy thinking that he has the right to think about what deer you should kill.
Yeah.
Which it has none of my business to do with what deer you kill. If that guy runs down there and grabs it and it makes him happy,
so be
that's
it.
The end of the day. You know what I mean? As long as he's happy and he walks up on it, nobody should have an opinion on it. So,
yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. I just think people get into it too seriously and they just need to relax a little bit and say, hey, maybe we're after big deer, maybe he wasn't.
We're guilty of it. Everybody just gets so involved in it, you know, and just I don't know, you just love it so much, you know, you just kind of get a little bit too wrapped in it. You just need to take a step back and I don't know, just kind of
just realize it's for fun. Everybody's out there for fun, you know. Everybody's waiting all year long to get after it too, and somebody gets a little bit of a trigger finger, or that might be his deer he wants, so just let him have it, you know what I mean? And there's going to be another one.
Yeah,
I mean, there's always more.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's all about the fun. You can't, but the fence line thing is, we have had asked a few neighbors if we could move them off the fence line because we wouldn't do it to you. So, just for sakes of
Kind of respect, I guess. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's. I know it's the proper line, you know.
You put one up right there, too.
Yeah. I'm probably hanging the same tree. Yeah.
What time are you going out?
I'll meet you
I'll
there.
Sit below you. I'll sit on my side. You sit on your side of the tree.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think there are certain times where, like, you know, if there's only one set up to ambush and you're trying to kill a particular deer, sometimes you have to, you know, get a little bit closer than you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think a common courtesy is whenever you're, you know, hanging a stand and you got to think about what the neighbor's perception might be. Yeah. Like if you're hanging a bow stand and they're looking at it thinking you're going to be up there with a, you know, straight wall cartridge or a bush master or something like that, that's probably not a good feeling for anybody. So if I am in that situation, I always try to face the stand complete 90 to the area and then get in and kill that buck. And if you can, you try and get your stand down because the buck's dead and more than likely won't use that again. I think aside from that, you know, we've called each other if we needed access or anything like that. And, you know.
It's best to, it's like if you harvest a deer, 100%, call us, come get that thing. Don't, you know what I mean? Like, that's the most important thing to us is just recover. Like, that's.
Yeah, make it recover. Because it always sucks whenever you got. At one neighbor is very, very particular because I mean we've ran into that.
I almost not was able to get my deer last year, but it ended up working out. He was great and he let me go get it, so it panned out. I knew he was dead. I just needed that extra 200 yards to walk and go get him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and it happened. So
yeah,
it's just working out. I mean, you're not gonna run the deer off on the
absolutely
neighbor's ground.
Not,
you're just,
no,
right.
Just, I mean, I get it. You know, you want to not put as much pressure on a piece, but like just running through it, you know. For a day to recover a deer, you're not hurting anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I feel like, Travis, when you shot that buck and you called me, I didn't think I could be there right away, but I think I said something like, I'll be available in like an hour. Like, I want to see it, you know? Like, I wanted to be able to celebrate with you.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, I think that's...
The ironic part was, with that, we recovered him, and we had to get back and recover his deer.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Because we both shot monsters on the same day.
Yeah, we doubled up, which was pretty wild. I mean, that's... Which was...
That was the highlight of our forever hunting so far. Like, it's the top that's going to be.
That's insane. Special.
The only thing that could top it is if we can
all three of us knock one down
the same night. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Hopefully that happens one of these days.
Hey, the chances I think are pretty good.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Yeah. You guys, cool. I don't know if you share a horseshoe or if they're
giving right now we're riding a high wave right now. So we'll hopefully it continues
fall
that way.
Eventually, but it does. That's the ups and downs of it. Yeah. Just got to keep getting after them.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks again. I appreciate
it. Absolutely.
You guys,
we appreciate everything you're doing here. This is pretty neat, you know?
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Keep it up. This is awesome.
We'll do, for sure. All right, cool.
Hunting and fishing, loving every day. I want to see them tall pines sway. Y'all close them eyes. Let's go there in our mind. Hunting and fishing and loving every day. That's the prayer this country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting and fishing and loving every day. Black coffee in the morning. Dark.